Well, welcome this morning. This morning we continue with our look at Rahab and how she really is an important figure. We'll see today that, well, of course, we know that Rahab is instrumental in the Israelites being able to take the city of Jericho. But something you may or you may not know is that Rahab is also mentioned in the Lord's genealogy in the Gospel of Matthew. So she is an important figure, and it stands that because she is mentioned there, that she must represent something within us that is able to bring about the birth of the Lord into our world, into the world of our minds. And this birth spiritually is a birth of the realization that the Lord is the Word. And so Rahab is needed in order for that to occur. So she is very important. And because, as we have touched on, she represents an affection for truth, then in that sense we can see why she's important. For there is needed an affection for truth for there to be any growth or development in the area of spiritual things. And of course, it's an affection for truth that we do not have of ourselves. It is something that is actually given by the Lord. So we're going to be looking at Rahab today, and specifically we're going to move and look at Rahab and what she did with the spies and what that represents within us, the shift that needs to occur within our own life in terms of our relationship to the Word. Our reading from the book of Joshua this morning is Joshua chapter 2, verses 4 to 11. Then the woman took the two men and hid them. So she said, "Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. And it happened as the gate was being shut, when it was dark, that the men went out. Where the men went, I do not know. Pursue them quickly, for you may overtake them." But she had brought them up to the roof and hidden them with the stalks of flax which she laid in order on the roof. Then the men pursued them by the road to the Jordan, to the fords. And as soon as those who pursued them had gone out, they shut the gate. Now before they lay down, she came to them on the roof and said to the men, "I know that the Lord has given you the land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were on the other side of the Jordan, Zion and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted. Neither did there remain any more courage in anyone because of you, for the Lord your God, He is God in heaven above and on earth beneath." In our reading this morning from the Heavenly Doctrines, it's from the work The Arcana Celestia, number 4007, subsection 4. The truth of faith does not exist with any who believe that they have faith of themselves and so believe that they are wise of themselves. Rather, it exists with those who believe that their faith and wisdom come from the Lord, for faith and wisdom are imparted to them because they do not ascribe any truth or good at all to themselves. Even less do they believe that they possess any merit through the goods and truths residing with them, and less still any righteousness, but only by ascribing these to the Lord, and so everything to His grace and mercy. There are two things which all who enter heaven cast aside, namely their proprium and consequent confidence and merit that is their own self-righteousness. Then they assume a heavenly proprium which comes from the Lord, and the Lord's merit or righteousness. And to the extent that these are so assumed, those persons advance further into heaven. So we've seen in dealing with this first part of the second chapter of Joshua that really that our ability to observe or self-observation begins once we are able from our life to acknowledge that the Lord alone is righteousness and so is deserving of merit. So this is a fundamental truth on which a genuine spiritual life is founded. And it is a truth that is repeated again and again throughout the heavenly doctrines. And it's repeated to help us to separate from our own proprium's tendency to claim for itself merit for good. Without truths to guide our thinking, we live in a belief that all good is ours. And this belief ends up closing our mind down to the life of heaven. And this is why it's such an important truth to get a hold of and to see in the reality of our own experience. You see, the heavenly doctrines teach that everyone, prior to being regenerated, claims merit for what is the Lord's to themselves. And this is because prior to a person becoming aware of what truths teach, they are caught up in the appearances of the senses. And the strongest appearance is that our life is our own. It is something that belongs to us. And that appearance causes people to enter into a belief that that is in fact the case. And so the heavenly doctrines, knowing that this is such a strong belief, such a strong appearance, constantly points out the fact that our life is not our own. That the good that flows is not ours, and also neither are the things that are from the hells, evils and falsities. These things also flow in. But until you realize that, you don't have an ability to separate from them. Because while you believe your life is your own, these things are taken to ourselves as our life. And when they're taken as our life and we're identified with them, then we have real trouble drawing any separation from them. Truths from the Word and the heavenly doctrines are able to remove from us these false beliefs, these appearances of the senses. And as they do that, so we are able to come to see the states of our life much more clearly. This ability to see our states of life, this arises not from us, but from the truths that we have. Because it is truths that enables us to see into ourselves, into our minds, to see what's going on there, to see the quality and states that are present with us. And these truths that help us to do that, these truths are from the Lord. They're from the Lord and they are His alone. So in this sense, because they are from the Lord, they are from His Word, all seeing, all understanding in regard to spiritual matters is from the Lord alone. We don't have a capacity in ourselves to see and to understand spiritual things. That is the Lord's gift to every person. And that is what we are charged with having oversight over. And this is why it is given to us to feel as if it is ours. Because we need to take hold of these truths and use them in the way that the Lord intends us to use them as we are directed in His Word and in the heavenly doctrines. So in other words, our ability to self-reflect, to examine, our ability to respond to what we see, this ability is the Lord as the Word within us. That's where it comes from. And this is what is meant by the Lord being righteousness, and so being merit. Everything is the Lord's. as far as the spiritual life is concerned. Nothing is ours. So truths teach that we all claim merit for what belongs to the Lord. This is what we are told, that without truths, we all claim merit. And even when we have truths as a matter of knowledge, we still go on claiming merit. Whether we can see that we do this depends on our willingness to work from truths in regard to our own inner states of life. Sure, it can be a little disconcerting when we read that this claiming merit for good contains all kinds of evils and falsities that flow from the loves of self and the world. But it can be no other way, because a belief that we have life in ourselves is a denial that the Lord is life itself. And when things concerning the Lord are denied, the opposite things get leave to come in and work their work. It is only when we commit to the inner path of self-examination and repentance that we can begin to see this, that we can have light shine on our states of mind. We are told that until we are prepared to do that kind of work, our state is such that we are blind and we can't help but call evils good and falsities truths. We're in desperate need of the Lord. We're in desperate need of the Lord's word. Now, a natural man recoils at this in disbelief. It doesn't believe it. And that's why we have it set down in the doctrines. So powerful is this appearance of the senses that we do good and that we claim merit because of that appearance, that the Lord has to constantly confront us with those truths. Because our proprium is continually, whenever truths come into the mind, the proprium is constantly looking to deflect them, so that they can't have an influence that will ultimately lead to it being dethroned. And so it looks to justify whatever is required to defend the false self-image of goodness that it projects and gets us to believe is ourselves. We read in our reading from the Arcana that this is something that is cast off by those who enter into heaven. Well, we are called to enter into heaven now, because heaven is a state of being. And so if we want to enter in, then we have to cast off that belief that the proprium offers up to us to take on as our own. So this is why, firstly, it's so important to believe what truths teach and not what we feel or what we want to believe. We have to come to believe that what truths teach is true. Secondly, that we make an effort to discover the reality of what truths teach in the experience of our own lives. So the teachings that are coming here from this story of Rahab, you know, we need to take these and learn what Rahab is within us. We have to come to see where we claim merit. We have to come to see these things so that we can be separated from them. Because while we remain attached to them, the life of heaven remains beyond our ability to experience in a fuller kind of way. So that task that we were offered some weeks ago, to make an effort to see when you claim merit to yourself, or same thing, just a little bit of an adjustment and sort of perspective, take note of when you find yourself offended because you're not receiving the praise you think you deserve. It's the same thing. Both are the same. You see, practicing simple tasks like this for even a short period of time can have a profound effect on the on our view of the self-image that we tend to carry. An effect for good. Because if we come to see what we're bound by, then we're in a position where we can seek the Lord to deliver us. The story of Rahab teaches that it is through the practice of responding affirmatively to our understanding of truths that we open the way to being influenced by higher quality truths. This willingness to respond is what is represented by Rahab the harlot. And there's more to Rahab than meets the eye, for her importance is emphasized in the fact that we find her mentioned as one of the women in the Lord's genealogy in the book of Matthew. In Matthew 1:5 we read, "And Salmon fathered Boaz out of Rahab." So Rahab, we see even in the literal sense, that Rahab forms an important link in bringing about the Lord's birth into the world. Now, because the word is primarily concerned with spiritual matters, we can establish that she must represent some essential spiritual element within our own minds that supports the spiritual birth of the Lord within us. That is what she must be. And this birth, this spiritual birth, is an inner birthing. And we experience it as we come into the realization that the Word is the Lord within the human mind. That realization is the birth of something so profound that it can transform every area of our being. From the perspective of spiritual Christianity, the genealogies in the Word are accounts of spiritual births within the human mind. Or if you like, the progressive development down through the line of goods and truths, or evils and falsities, depending on the context that the genealogy occurs in. Nothing of a genuine spiritual nature can be born without there being an affection for what is good and true. And such affections don't come from us, but are from the Word, and so belong to the Lord. In the early stages of our spiritual development, we have a desire to live a spiritual life, to do good, to be everything we think a spiritual person should be. And we start out chasing our own ideal of what we think a spiritual person is, or chasing what we think the spiritual life is, failing to see that it is often based on a lot of misconceptions. In actual fact, in the early stages of spiritual development, we are largely driven by self-interest, which we don't see due to a lack of a real understanding of the truths that we profess that we believe. This means that we tend to live in terms of the activity of what's going on within us from a different set of values and beliefs than those we profess to believe externally. And spiritual work involves seeing these kinds of contradictions that exist within our minds. When we start out on the inner journey, our spiritual life, our affection for truth, doesn't yet have a true understanding. Can't do. It's just starting out. It's an infantile understanding. So there are a lot of false ideas that cling to our view when we start out in the spiritual life. And of course, the spiritual life is about progressing and having these false ideas taken off so that we can have true ideas take their place. But we start out confused. We start out with a mixture of what is true and what is false, believing the appearances of the senses, believing what the Word teaches, and moving between these different realms. We need truths in order to guide us. To guide us and instruct us as to how we need to proceed. And this state is captured in the description of Rahab as a harlot. So this is a description of our inner state. The spiritual state is called harlotry due to our ignorance of truths, which results in mixing the desire for good with false beliefs. This is what it is. And so to represent this state of our affection for truth at these early stages, to represent it being caught up in falsities due to ignorance, we find Rahab the harlot is caught up in the city of Jericho, which is inhabited by Canaanites, who are evils and falsities. We can see this illustrated further in the fact that Rahab, like us in our early stages of going through the process of coming to see truths as a matter of life, well, Rahab has a knowledge of God and what God's been doing with the Israelites. In verses 9 to 11 we read, "And she said to the men, 'I know that Jehovah has given the land to you, and that your terror has fallen on us, and that all those living in the land have melted before you. For we have heard how Jehovah dried up the water of the Sea of Reeds, or the Red Sea, before you as you were going out of Egypt. Also, that which you have done to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you destroyed. And we have heard, and our heart has melted, and there still does not rise a spirit in any man because of you. For Jehovah," and this is Rahab's acknowledgement, "for Jehovah your God, he is God in the heavens above and in the earth below." So Rahab is well attuned to knowledge concerning God and God's working with the children of Israel. And we see that with Rahab, this knowledge is excited or is brought to the fore due to the presence of the spies being there. And these spies represent those truths that can be used to spy out the land, to examine our states of consciousness. So what's illustrated here is that a point has to be reached when our knowledge of truths, knowing about these things that God has done, has to move beyond just mere knowing about them and become something that motivates us to make real changes. This is what is illustrated by Rahab. Rahab, as an affection for truth, is something in us that the Lord can use despite our ignorance of truths. And the kind of ignorance here is not so much a lack of knowledge or access to truths, a lack of knowledge about what God has done, what God is capable of. We can all read about that in the Word. We can all read about its spiritual meaning in the heavenly doctrines. It's not that kind of ignorance. The kind of ignorance being spoken about here is the kind of ignorance that keeps those things at a distance, that doesn't actually take them into the life. Because when they're taken into the life, they become transformed. And understanding, not just knowledge, is gained. And if we live from that understanding, then we move into wisdom. And so there has to be a progression from where Rahab is at in this wall of Jericho, caught up in the wall, that's where her house actually was, in that defense, in those defenses that stands against the children of Israel or the truths of the Lord. So it has to be drawn out of that. And so there has to be a shift that moves from this knowledge of things at a distance to it becoming something one with our very life. And in this particular instance, it is the difference between knowing that all righteousness and merit belongs to the Lord because the Word teaches this, and seeing for yourself how your own proprium is in a continual state of claiming merit to itself, and that we buy into this falsity. That we buy into it. See, this is how, this is the very difference in the kind of knowledge versus understanding realm. Knowledge, we know and acknowledge these things. Understanding, we actually see the implications of it for our own life at a personal level. And if you see those implications, then you cannot but be motivated to work with the Lord to have His life become much more prominent in your own. So this shift is described in verse 1, right at the outset of this chapter, which actually highlights what it's all about, where it is said that the spies enter into Rahab's house, where they are said to lie down. Okay, so these spies have been taken in to Rahab's house, and they are said to lie down. Now this term, lie down, in the Hebrew, it carries a sexual connotation. And as far as the spiritual sense is concerned, this is an important point, because it indicates that a level of conjunction has occurred with the two men. And this suggests that spiritually, that the affection for truth has come into conjunction with those kinds of truths represented by the spies. Now, when that happens, that is where a person becomes motivated to really begin to live from the truths that they have. When this affection for truth really gets hold of truths that can help it do the process of self-examination, then a conjunction has occurred and a real shift has happened. Excuse me. What we see there is that ignorance is beginning to give way to an understanding of truths, not as mere knowledge, but as something that constitutes our very life. This recognition that what truths teach is actually true, and that we are obliged to respond to them, this is what protects the spies from the king of Jericho. Makes complete sense. If we have an affection for truth, a genuine affection for truth, then it's protected from the powers of the proprium to try and get hold of it, and in this case probably kill it off, destroy its influence in our life. So the affection for truth is vital in preserving our life. Our life as the Lord sees our life. So this is how the actions of Rahab are to be understood in terms of their application to the processes involved in your regeneration. Using truths from the Word to examine our states represented by the spies in Jericho stirs up the king of Jericho, stirs things up. Certain things are not happy about what may occur because of this process going ahead. And so we see in this story that it offers a wonderful illustration of the means by which truth is able to penetrate the human mind and do its work. Now this truth, it must be remembered, and we must constantly remind ourselves, is the Lord with us. For it is the Lord alone who is able to penetrate and shine His light on the falsities and evils of our proprium. It is the Lord alone who is able to take us through seeing these selfish states, holding us while we go through the struggle of coming to terms with them, and is able to move us on when the separation has occurred. In verse 6, we read what Rahab's response is. She made them go up on the roof and hid them with the stalks of flax, which she arranged on the roof. What we see here is how the affection for truth protects what is true. By making them go up on the roof, what is higher speaks of a reception of things deeper into our life, or a willingness to take truths into the deeper levels of our being. For to go up spiritually means to go within. And so we see that it is in our willingness to take truths into our life on a deeper level that actually protects them. And truths are only taken into the life through applying them. There's no other way. And then on the roof, we read that she hid them within the stalks of flax. These stalks of flax arranged on the roof. Now, the effect of taking truths into our life results in things of the mind being set in order, being arranged correctly. So here we have the men hidden within the flax, or the flax stalks. And so we have an image of living truths represented by the men becoming established within a deeper level of our being, being hidden within the flax stalks. So what are these flax stalks? Well, the flax stalks are a raw state of understanding and desire for doing good. Okay. So Rahab, being the affection for truth, works with flax. But what we see here is the flax is in a raw state. It hasn't been processed yet. And of course, from flax, we get linen, clothing. And so Rahab, while she is in the ignorance of truth, or while that affection with us does not have truths to guide it, does good, acts kindly, does all the things in an external sense that it thinks should be done, but claims the merit to itself. And so it's unprocessed. The truths have to be processed. And so the men are within the flax. Okay? Our ability to, or our potential to be able to observe our own states of life is within external good. It's there in a rudimentary kind of way. And the Lord seeks to draw it out as we engage in the spiritual walk. So the stalks of flax represent a basic understanding that it is a good thing to be useful, that it is a good thing to love others, but as yet it is seen only as something quite external. It isn't yet something truly spiritual or something processed with which our minds can be clothed. In the Arcana, number 7601, subsection 3, it says, "The meaning of flax or linen as truth has its origin in representatives in heaven. In heaven, those who are guided by the truth of the natural are seen clothed in white, like the whiteness of linen. The actual truth of the natural is also represented there as fabric made from the finer kind of flaxen threads. These threads have the appearance of silken ones, and clothing made from them has a similar appearance, brilliant, wonderfully translucent, and soft. That is, if the truth represented in that way is rooted or grounded in good. But on the other hand, those threads which look flaxen do not have a translucent, brilliant, or soft appearance, but a hard and brittle appearance, though they are still white, if the truth that is represented in that way is not rooted or grounded in good." So we get linen from flax. and linen is used to manufacture cloth for clothing. When there is a genuine affection for truth operating, then the raw material of our mind in regard to our understanding of what is good and true, represented by the flax stalks, can be organized around living truths that now exist on a deeper level of our being, represented by the men who are received into the house or the good that Rahab represents. And this reception is nothing more than a willingness to apply the truths we have to life. In the specific case, it has to do with recognizing that the Lord alone, recognizing Him alone as righteousness and merit, and that we have nothing in ourselves that can be called good other than what is from Him. Amen.